It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Today I hope I speak not only for our countries, but for all civilized nations, when I say to the North, do not underestimate us and do not try us. We will defend our common security, our shared prosperity, and our sacred liberty. The time for excuses is over. Now is the time for strength. If you want peace, you must stand strong at all times. The world cannot tolerate the menace of a rogue regime that threatens with nuclear devastation. All responsible nations must join forces to isolate the brutal regime of North Korea, to deny it, and any form of it. You cannot support, you cannot supply, you cannot accept.
That's President Donald Trump in South Korea speaking just in the last 12 hours. They're the opposite side of the clock to us, and so it's time for bed now. But while we were sleeping, that's what he was doing. I'm understanding that he's being received by the South Koreans very well. I think the South Korean people, so many of them share our values. So many of them are Christians, as you know, but by the same kind of struggle that's going on in this country, they have a president now who leans to the left, is sympathetic with North Korea. And so it's a split political situation there, but President Trump was speaking, plain truth to them. I think I mentioned to you yesterday that in public schools, there's been a softening of curriculum. So the new kids in South Korea don't understand what America did for them during the Korean War. Most of our kids don't understand that. And so they're easily persuaded that, North Koreans are their blood brothers and they're not so bad and America is not so good. And so it's really complicated. But I think that people who understand truth, when they hear the president say we have to be firm in our dealings with North Korea, understand it resonates with them and they very much appreciate President Trump's strength on this. So we'll talk more about that. Not today, but we will speak more about it. I want to give you an update on the Texas shooter because there are just more things coming in today. Matt Finn had a report last night on a special report, so let's listen.
An El Paso police report states the Texas church shooter escaped from a New Mexico mental health facility in 2012. Police responded to a bus stop where a witness said the shooter was a danger to himself and planned to take a bus out of state. Police took him into custody. Authorities also now confirm they have the shooter's cell phone but can't get into it, so it's being sent to Quantico. The FBI also confirms the shooter was not flagged in its databases. And while police say the shooting stemmed from bad blood in the family, the shooter's estranged wife and her mother were not in the church on Sunday. Members of Congress outraged the church shooter was able to buy guns after being discharged from the Air Force for beating his wife and cracking his stepson's skull.
We have laws in the books that says if you're a domestic abuser, you're not supposed to own a gun. He was a domestic abuser. That's why we got all these questions with the Air Force right now, which is how did this get slipped through the cracks?
And while in South Korea, President Trump dismissed the idea of a stricter vetting for gun purchasers.
There would have been no difference 3 days ago, and you might not have had that very brave person who happened to have a gun or a rifle in his truck go out and shoot him and hit him and neutralize him. And I can only say this, if he didn't have a gun, instead of having 26 dead, he would have had hundreds more dead.
26 people, including a mother and her unborn child, gunned down in this picturesque white church. The neighbor being hailed as a hero for grabbing a rifle, running barefoot to the church, and shooting the suspect, now speaking out.
People at that church, they're friends of mine, their family. And every time I heard a shot, I knew that that probably represented a life.
Wow, that's so moving. You know, we played a little bit of his comments yesterday, the neighbor that ran out barefoot and really did actually shoot the shooter. It's just very, just makes you stop, you know, and realize the preciousness of life, the preciousness of life. And from a report from two people who were inside the church, they said that the shooter walked up and down the aisle with babies, at least, I don't know how many babies, but if babies cried, he would shoot them point blank. And also they reported that he yelled when he came into the sanctuary, everybody die, an obscenity. Everybody die, then he addressed them with an obscenity. You know, I just one thing on that. I've been saying this, and I still have a feeling about this. It's only that. It's only a feeling. So I'm not reporting any kind of inside information I have. I still think that this shooter had some affiliation with Antifa. He certainly was influenced by them. He wore black. He had the mask, one of the masks like they wear. And no one's mentioning that. No one's saying a word about that. And so it's creepy to me and frightening how law enforcement across the country is not giving us information about these shooters. And I believe they're sort of like strategically withholding things. It seems that way, doesn't it? With a Las Vegas shooter, you know, how far can we go back? There are so many, you know, choices of these mass murderers. We know about the one in New York City because he was an Islamist, but these others, but, you know, the only reason we know about that is because he was so blatant about it. Wanted, you know, ISIS flags in his hospital room. Otherwise, I'm not sure we would know that. And that reminds me of this other story. You know, we've been following Rand Paul's attack by his neighbor, where he broke, really broke, literally, five ribs. And this is what the police are charging his neighbor with. Misdemeanor, fourth-degree assault with a minor injury. A minor injury? Are you kidding me? A person who is close to Rand Paul, a friend of his, for the last 20 years, has said that Senator Paul has no idea, did not see this coming, was doing his lawn, had his ear, you know, the sound, you know, headset on to deaden the sound, did not hear his neighbor approach, doesn't have any idea why this happened. The attorney for the other doctor who attacked him violently, who is, by the way, a leftist, a socialist, that's the other doctor, is saying that it was a minor, you know, neighborhood dispute. Paul is saying, the friend is reporting that Paul has no idea what this is about. And he disputes the idea that there has been a long-term dispute. So it sounds to me, okay, this is again my speculation, like this is political payback. Like this is someone out of control. Are we kind of seeing enough of this to get the drift? Anyway, that's the update on Rand Paul, Senator Rand Paul. And, you know, I'll save this story for later because we have so much to tell you. Big race in the country last night. This is the way you'll see it written. Democrats win governor's races in Virginia, New Jersey, and pushback against Trump. That's from ABC. Yahoo, Virginia elects Democrat governor in rejection of Trumpism. And then Reuters, Democrats win bitter Virginia governor's race in setback for Trump. Okay, so you're going to be hearing today that this is a rebuke of Trump and his policies because Virginia, especially in New Jersey, I don't think there was much of a chance of the Republican candidate winning. And in New York City, de Blasio won his race 66% to 28% for the Republican challenger. Is anyone surprised? I'm always, you know, I can't. It always defies logic that New Yorkers would continue, especially to elect a man who is a communist. I mean, he really is. I don't know why they do that. They've seen people have to leave the city because the tax burden has become so great. So I don't know. I don't understand. I don't claim to understand, but this is what we're seeing. And in Virginia, Ralph Northam, the Democratic candidate who is the most liberal leftist candidate Virginia has ever put up for that position, won over Ed Gillespie by 9 points, 53.9 or so percent to 44, probably about 45%. So about 9%. You might be wondering about the John Adams, who was challenging Mark Herring. Mark Herring was the incumbent attorney general who expedited gay marriage in Virginia against the will of the people. John Adams now has lost by, I think there's 8 points difference between their races. So Mark Herring is the victor again. You may remember, of course you do, that Bob Marshall, the delegate who sponsored the same-sex marriage ban and also the bathroom bill that would prevent people from using just any bathroom they want, just depending on how they feel and what they think they are. Bob Marshall was roundly defeated by transgender candidate Danica Rome by about 9 points, totally defeated in his district. And then John McGuire, who was our guest last week, who was a former Navy SEAL with a great story. We told his story last Friday. Actually won over Melissa Dart in his precinct, and he won by something like 19 points. So that was amazing, especially when you consider what happened in the rest of the state. There's a lot to say about this. Excuse me. I had the... Yes, here I am. Okay, so I want to, before we introduce our guest today, because what we're going to do is in the last segment, we're going to be talking about the tax bill. You recognize that while all of this is happening, members of Congress are trying to change our tax code and create some sort of a tax bill. And we've hardly had a chance to talk about it because of all the headline news. But we're going to talk about it this morning. And then in a few minutes, Ken Cuccinelli, former Attorney General of Virginia, is going to come along and talk to us about what happened in Virginia. It's important, you see, because it was kind of a litmus test for the 2018 election. So is it true that because Ralph Northam beat Ed Gillespie by 9 points, does that mean disaster in the 2018s for Republicans? That's what the left is saying. That's what the press is saying. So we're going to talk about that, so I hope you'll stay tuned. It really has repercussions for all of us. But I want to remind you something brighter, lighter, that we are offering these beautiful Christmas, well, cute, they're cute, Christmas wristbands that say Keep Christ in Christmas. And we're offering them for you free, the first one for you free, and you can buy more if you so choose. They're available at AFA.net. That's AFA.net. And, of course, it brings starts conversations and businesses and everywhere you go in a positive way. And then also SamaritansPurse.org/OCC. If you want to help us with this Operation Christmas Child, sending boxes, these shoe boxes, to kids who are in places where there's war and disaster and famine around the world. And you pack the box and then Samaritan's Purse puts something in there that gives the kids the message of Jesus in a language and in a way that they can understand. And so if you want to do that, the National Collection Week is November 13th through the 20th, and you need to get your box now so you can pack it and then take your box for pickup. It's SamaritansPurse.org/OCC. And then last but not least, our Orange Letter Campaign. We are asking you to write a letter to a North Korean believer. Something short. It will be translated into Korean and read over Korean language broadcasting to the North Koreans who are under terrible duress in their country. And you can do that by going to EngageMagazine.net. That's EngageMagazine.net. Maybe it would lift your spirits a little bit this morning to do something for others at this Christmas season. In fact, I have it on good authority that's what God does in our life when we reach out and help other people. He lifts our own spirits. All right, well, coming up next is former Attorney General of the state of the Commonwealth of Virginia, Ken Cuccinelli, to talk about what happened in Virginia last night. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
So what would you do with an extra $500 a month in your budget? $500. This isn't hypothetical, by the way. This is something you may need to think about very soon if you decide to become a member of MediShare. MediShare is a way to pay for your health care, and typically it costs $500 less per month for a family versus other health care plans. So seriously, think about this. You could pay off loans, pay down a mortgage, save the money for retirement, donate to charity. That would be a big deal. But you know what? Here's the best thing. MediShare works. It has 250,000 members, and it's growing fast. With MediShare, not only do you save, you don't have to pay for things you don't believe in either, and that is a beautiful thing too. So here's how you can find out more, and you might actually wind up saving even more than $500 a month. So check into it. Here's the number. Call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23, now available in Montana. 855-PSALM-23.
Frequently we hear, all politicians are liars, or throw the bums out, all of them. I strongly disagree. This is Jim Garlow. Politics is not a dirty word. It's a calling to be highly respected. Then why such a negative view? Could it be because government is failing to be what a government is supposed to be? The primary purpose of government is to protect its citizens, to do so by restraining evil. Isaiah said it centuries ago, "For the Lord is our judge, our lawgiver, our king. It is he who will save us." So are we advocating a theocracy where religious rulers govern based on what God has spoken? No. To affirm God's role in government is not to call for some type of a theocracy. Our goal is for our government to protect our God-given rights. Stay well-versed in these issues at jimgarlow.com. Be prepared to live out your faith.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Blake Bramlett. I graduated in May of 2016, and I graduated with a degree in interdisciplinary studies, focusing in psychology and missions. The professors here at TMU have really impacted my life in more than one way. In the classroom, of course, but really honestly, what makes the experience at Truett better is that they're mentors to us.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
So the Democrats and the mainstream media are mocking people of faith, mocking anyone who's offering a prayer for the victims of the massacre at the First Baptist Church in Sutherland Springs, Texas. Now, this is not terribly surprising, because these are the same people who want to replace God with big government. These are the same people who tried to eradicate God from the public marketplace. These are the same people who booed God at the DNC in Charlotte. I was there, heard it with my own ears. They tried to vote the Almighty out of the party platform. So I am not surprised when they demean and smear Christian lawmakers like President Trump and House Speaker Ryan, who offered thoughts and prayers for the victims. CNN's Don Lemon went on a snarky tirade, saying thoughts and prayers did not stop the shooting.
Thoughts and prayers, thoughts and prayers, thoughts and prayers.
Yeah, well, that's just the kind of mocking you'd expect from someone who believes government is bigger than God. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. Well, the news from Virginia in the race yesterday is, for the most part, really pretty dreadful. Ed Gillespie was beaten by 9 points. I guess it depends on your perspective. By Ralph Northam, the Democrat, the candidate furthest to the left of any candidate that's ever run in Virginia. And, of course, Bob Marshall, Delegate Bob Marshall, who's been with us so often, was beaten by transgender candidate Danica Rome, significantly, really. And there are other things, too. The Attorney General's race was lost. So what happened there? I've already read to you some headlines from other outlets. In fact, Dems win from coast to coast. That's what The Hill is saying. And there are lots of other headlines that mirror that. But I want to read you just two quotes. This is from the Daily Beast. And this is a quote from John Weaver, who is a strategist for Governor John Kasich. He says, "Trumpism is a cancer that will end your political career and steal your honor if you embrace it. Republicans should hold dear to their time-honored fidelity to the Constitution and personally to their soul, and turn their backs on Trump for the sake of the country first and the party second. The results in Virginia were the first step toward redemption for the party, though I fear 2018 will be such a shellacking that it will be the true wake-up call. On the other side of the coin, we have a statement from Andrew Sarabian, who is Steve Bannon's political advisor, and he says Ed Gillespie had no message, was inauthentic, spoke from both sides of his mouth, and at the end of the day, even the deplorables couldn't save him. Gillespie campaigned with George W. Bush, but ran from President Trump. All right, Ken Cuccinelli joins me this morning. No one knows more about Virginia politics than Ken. He's run for governor there. He served as attorney general. He's currently the head of Senate Conservatives Fund, and I've asked him to join us this morning because I'm really eager to know what he thinks. Good morning, Ken.
Morning, Sandy.
All right. All right. Do you agree it was a bloodbath? Do you agree that this is a terrible message of rebuke for Donald Trump?
Well, there's two sides to it. There's three basic elements to the outcome yesterday, two of them strategic and one of them tactical. Trump was overwhelmingly the major motivator to bring more farther left voters out. No question about it. But that's their side of the aisle. And with such a polarized electorate, you ask, well, what about our side of the aisle? And the complete failure of Republicans to deliver on the most basic things they've promised leaves Republican voters demoralized. So in my election 4 years ago, I lost by 2.5 points. Ed Gillespie lost by 9. And you can say what you want about Ed Gillespie, but he wasn't going to overcome the anger at the president on the left and the demoralization with Republican lack of accomplishment on the right. Those are the two strategic elements that combined to really wipe the Republicans out in Virginia. The one tactical item was the Democrats did a much better job than they have done historically, turning out the youngest voters. Now, that doesn't have to doom you. I won under 25 voters by 6 points. I still managed to lose the race 4 years ago. But the Dems were turning them out as a proxy for left-wing voters, and those are the people who came out the most.
There's so much to talk about here. I want to make the point that you did not have the help of the Republican establishment in Virginia, whereas Ed Gillespie had it in spades. I mean, George W. Bush came in and campaigned for him, and the establishment Republicans were all about Ed Gillespie. And Ed did the same thing that national candidates have done, that I think the Trump movement has rejected, and that is, you know, trying to split everything down the middle. There's this, yeah, but there's this, and not having any passion. So there's no question. Here, Ed ran with the establishment. You ran without it. You lost by a lot less. So that point does have to be made. And I have been.
I don't disagree with you on that point. But it's important, I think, because you have a national audience, for people to realize Virginia in these odd year elections is very often blown by the winds coming out of Washington. I mean, we border on Washington. And there's one other factor that people should know. I'm sure you've all seen commentators talk to you about how Virginia's gone from red to blue, or at least purple-blue.
Yep.
And the simple reason for that is Northern Virginia, the Washington, D.C. suburbs, and Republicans and Democrats have grown the federal government so much since 2000 or so. George Bush and the Republican Congress in the last decade owned this plenty themselves, that you bring in a bunch of big government people to work it and to make money off it. They all live in Northern Virginia because we have lower taxes than Maryland. And how the heck do you think those people vote? And you can see, looking at the map last night, how they vote, which is why people say we have sort of two states in Virginia, Nova, Northern Virginia, and Rova, rest of Virginia. But the reason we do is big government. That's a long-term problem for Republican candidates in Virginia. Last night, I didn't include it in my elements because it's so long-term, it isn't sudden. But until this federal government shrinks substantially, Northern Virginia is going to present a major obstacle to candidates running as Republicans, whether they're conservatives like me or sort of ordinary Republicans like Ed.
Mm. You know, let me just add a couple of things here. Nate Cohn, who I don't know, but he tweeted, the Gillespie did really well in white rural Virginia. He says he's going to outperform Romney and Cuccinelli in all sorts of areas. He was annihilated in the suburbs. Jim Garrity, who we both know, said that the electorate is Democrat plus 10. Not many Republicans going to win in that. Judy Woodruff tweeted that Northam won 97% of the Democrats. Gillespie won 96% of the Republicans. But many more Democrats showed up. They were 41% turnout, Republicans 31%. That's pretty amazing, isn't it?
Ed Gillespie won independents, not by a lot, but he won them. I won them by more 4 years ago, despite being what they would all call a more polarizing figure. But both of us lost because what so many people want to deny all the time on the right, but they don't on the left, is these off-year elections are base elections. If your base is not motivated, you lose. Bottom line. Why isn't the Republican base motivated right now? It isn't because of the Democrats. It's because of the Republicans. And I don't mean people among Republican voters are upset with Trump. You know, people have their feelings about Trump. But the driver yesterday in Virginia was failure of Republicans in Congress to achieve. I don't use the word lead, but to achieve. They aren't even seriously trying to keep their promises. So if you're a Republican on Capitol Hill and you want to take that advice, that does not mean you pass some watered-down baloney bill and get up there and declare you've repealed Obamacare. It means you get up there and you repeal Obamacare. And the model here, and Mark Thiessen of Fox News wrote an article about this a year ago, is Scott Walker in it from 2010 to 2014. Scott Walker in his state, Wisconsin, ran on very hard things for Wisconsin. It was a really hard thing to limit union power and to come out in an election and say this is a major goal because it's going to have huge budgetary impacts. And then he went in and facing, and I know you remember it, Sandy, literally nationally historic opposition at the state level. 100,000 people physically shutting down his state capital. So what did he do? Did he do what Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell do, surrender as fast as he could? No.
No.
He did exactly what he said he was going to do, and he didn't water it down. What happened? The loud and vociferous left got a recall election. And what was the outcome of that recall election, despite the fact that the other side made most of the noise? Scott Walker was reelected by virtually the exact same margin that he was originally elected by, if I remember correctly, with more voters showing up.
Yeah.
So what's the lesson? The lesson is it's hard, it's uncomfortable, it can be ugly while it's going on, but nothing is as important as keeping your promises. And in 2012, the Wisconsin Republicans gained seats. And in 2014, the Wisconsin Republicans gained seats. And they built a ground game that was adequate for Donald Trump in 2016 to win Wisconsin by 10,000 or so votes, something that a Republican hadn't done in quite some time. That, Sandy, is the model.
Yeah, that's an amazing story. It really is. And I want to mention an article that J. Christian Adams published this morning in which he talks about how this is his title, Gillespie ran a Jeb campaign in a Trump world. It's an excellent article.
Yeah.
And of course, Ed Gillespie had George W. Bush come in and campaign for him. He refused to have Donald Trump, you know, any operatives around him campaign with him until the last few minutes. And then Donald Trump sort of stepped in. But that has to be made clear because I think that's important, Ken. This is kind of the battle of the party right now. And I think if we are not careful, I think that the media will label this as a round defeat for Donald Trump. And I actually don't think That it is. And by the way, let me move to something. There are two other main things I want to talk to you here about. Sean Davis has tweeted this morning, and I've heard an insider say that there is this wonder about whether there was an extremely well-coordinated, under-the-radar Democratic operation that only targeted down-ballot races. I wonder about that, too. The staffer that I talked to said that she'd noticed that the traffic...
No.
You don't think so?
And because, I mean, I live next door to Bob Marshall. My delegate, Rich Anderson, lost to his, you know, Bernie Sanders guy. Next door to Bob Marshall in Manassas, a Democratic socialist won without the support of the Democratic Party, spending hardly any money. Look, these candidates rode the left-wing anger wave. And we need to, it's hard when you use the word blame because our side wants to resist it. Donald Trump is responsible for the turnout on the left, okay? He's responsible for that. But Republicans are responsible for the failure of the turnout on the right. And I don't mean the candidates per se so much as the environment that they're all running in, and that is because of congressional Republicans' failure. So the lesson here is they're going to be motivated by Trump. Nobody's going to, you know, settle down President Trump. He is who he is. It's part of his charm, right? But what can we do? What we can do is repeal Obamacare. What we can do is actually pass tax cuts, yeah, not reshuffle the chairs on the Titanic. We can get our butts in gear to get judges on the bench. There are things that we can do to motivate our side. The idea, we're not going to demotivate their side. They're going to show up, folks. They're coming. They're coming in 2018. The question is, are we?
Yep, absolutely. And we only have 3 minutes left, and I just have to know what you think about Bob Marshall's defeat to Danica Rome by such a substantial margin, about 9 points as far as I can see. What's going on there? Because Bob seems to be the quintessential opposite, the person who was very clear about what he believed and ran on principle and really was roundly defeated. So what are your thoughts about that?
Well, Bob has always won, you know, and he's done for 26 years. So he's lasted a long time as a major target of the left. Statistically, you take enough shots, eventually you're going to hit your target. But this was a wave election that wasn't of Bob's doing. It was, as I said, President Trump motivated the left and the Republicans demotivated the right. And Bob has been a pro-life leader in Virginia for those whole 26 years. And I think a lot of people in the district weren't aware that they're electing a transgender candidate. That's one. And two, you asked me how I feel about it. Obviously, I'm very disappointed in that on two levels. One, I just appreciate what a warrior Bob has been, and for your listeners, that has oftentimes been against his own party. He has been a lone wolf for a long time, because the Republican leadership that existed until this year was not particularly appreciative of Bob. Let's put it that way.
I get it.
Yet he stuck to his principles, and I hate to see people who are actually willing to stand for what they believe is right against both sides lose like that. That is really disappointing.
But we all also have to say that
one of the worst outcomes of the night.
That precinct went to Hillary Clinton, right, in the election?
Yes. Yeah.
Sorry,
yeah.
It was already an uphill battle, but still, oh, so sad. And I also want to point out that Ed Gillespie went soft on the transgender bathroom issue during the election, and now Bob stood fast. So it's just that's an interesting thing, and that's where elections, there's so many factors in who wins. It's sometimes just a combination of factors that causes victory or defeat, and that's what we're seeing here as we analyze. Ken, thank you so much. I'm sure you had a long night, and I appreciate you joining us this morning.
Good to be with you, Sandy.
Hey, talk to you soon. Thanks, you too. All right, we're going to put that article by Christian Adams on our Facebook page. Gillespie ran a Jeb campaign in a Trump world. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
But evil men and seducers shall wax worse and worse, deceiving and being deceived. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. To date, we know 26 people were killed and at least 20 others wounded when a murderous monster took aim at congregants at First Baptist Church of Sutherland Springs, Texas. Predictably, regressives immediately pined for more gun control laws while ignoring the fact that a lawful gun owner and NRA trainer prevented the carnage from being much worse. Before we go on about political issues, let's not forget that the victims were real people with real families, and mourn with those who mourn.
Listen to the Hamilton Corner, weekdays from 5 to 6 p.m. Central on AFR. For more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Many in America seem to have forgotten that its foundation was built on God. In this 40th year celebration of the American Family Association, we invite you to help us remind America once again of the truth behind our national motto, In God We Trust. You can do your part and display your faith with an In God We Trust car decal from the AFA store. Order yours today with free shipping at afastore.net. That's afastore.net.
Hello, everyone. This is Tim Wildman, President of American Family Association and American Family Radio. This is your early announcement about the 2018 tours to Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown, as well as Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon. We call these Spiritual Heritage Tours. There'll be one in June and one in September. For all the information about these tours, go to our website, www.spiritualheritagetours.com. Very simply, spiritualheritagetours.com.
Here for your encouragement and your walk with God. This is David Wolin with Haven Ministries, inviting you to anchor your day in God's Word. Psalm 46 opens with these words: God is our refuge and strength, an ever-present help in trouble. And then the psalm invites us to imagine the worst-case scenario: mountains falling into the sea and the earth giving way. You know, at some point in our lives, we all face something that feels like that. Maybe today you're in the midst of a trial like this and you're wondering, is God with me? Will God see me through this? And as hard as they are, moments like that are also an opportunity to experience God as never before. And likewise, Psalm 46 concludes with an invitation from the Almighty. Be still and know that I am God. Get daily encouragement from Anchor Devotional. In print monthly, visit getanchor.com.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Elections are supposed to have consequences. For example, Donald Trump's election was supposed to result in a draining of the bipartisan establishment morass he derided as the swamp. Addressing the immigration crisis, including building the wall, and accurately identifying and defeating our Sharia supremacist enemies. Yesterday's balloting in Virginia is much more likely to be consequential in all three areas. Official Washington will interpret the Democrats' triumph there as a mandate for more swamp, no wall, and more willful blindness regarding the Muslim Brotherhood's penetration, infrastructure, and operations in this country. The first test will be how the Senate treats Kirstjen Nielsen's nomination to be the next Homeland Security Secretary. After all, she seems aligned with that decidedly un-Trumpian agenda. Post-Virginia, even GOP senators seem unlikely to pursue the course corrections promised and so desperately needed at DHS. Neither will Ms. Nielsen. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
We have just learned that President Trump phoned into a meeting of Democratic senators who were discussing their input in tax reform. This is a meeting that was organized by Senator Joe Manchin and the White House Legislative Affairs Director Mark Short. We're told the meeting lasted about 15 minutes, the president phoning in from Asia. One Democratic senator told the president, quote, if you want to do this in a bipartisan manner, you will get to 50 votes. Aside from that, today we learned that the GOP suffered a key defection on tax reform. Congressman Daryl Issa today announced he cannot support the present House bill because of the SALT provision, the cap on state and local tax deductions. Democrats are salivating at the prospect of more GOP defections.
If you don't get this done, well, you might as well give up the majority because you ain't coming back in the majority.
That is a taste of the acrimony at the Ways and Means Committee markup. It lasted 8 hours on Monday, the same expected today and tomorrow before it's reported out of committee on Thursday. That SALT provision also raising the ire of Democrats in high tax states.
Early this year, Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin suggested that we need to repeal SALT to stop subsidizing states. Mr. Chairman, I have never heard anything as stupid from any Treasury Secretary in my life.
And that while Speaker Paul Ryan was saying that there is a limit to Republican tolerance for Democratic obstructionism.
We also don't want to have amendments that are designed to try and stop this process.
And on the Senate side, Majority Leader McConnell was saying that Republicans are moving quickly to pass their version.
The Finance Committee will be rolling out their proposal, the starting place, what we call the chairman's mark, at the end of the week.
Separately, flanked by Treasury Secretary Mnuchin, White House Counselor Kellyanne Conway, and other Senate conservatives, Senator Ted Cruz of Texas urged his colleagues to include a repeal of Obamacare's individual mandate in any tax reform bill. But the leadership of both houses is a bit wary of that, having been burned by Republican moderates whose opposition helped to sink Obamacare repeal earlier this year.
Okay, Doug McElway on Fox News yesterday, special report actually, and you know, weren't they tasked with simplifying our tax system and of enabling us to just file our taxes on a simple, you know, postcard and saving money and changing the whole tax code so that businesses, big businesses especially, would bring their finances back home and reinvest? And what in the world's happening with this? We've hardly spoken of it because of all the news and all the headlines, the killings, the shootings. How can we keep up? But while we're covering this, much is happening in the House, as you heard Duck just describe. I can't think of anyone better to talk to us about this than Daniel Horowitz, the senior editor at Conservative Review. Daniel's been writing about this faithfully and following it, and he actually understands it. So I want to talk to him this morning. Daniel, thanks for joining us.
Hey, great to be with you, Sandy.
Great to talk to you, too. It's been too long, Daniel. All right, I'm really confused because we thought we had one plan, and then in the last, few days, they've come out with some different plan. And you're maintaining that actually in the long run, this is going to raise taxes because of changes they've made. Speak about it. What's going on?
You know, if you want to know why Republicans got crushed last night, this is the embodiment of it. Republicans and really conservatives are in the most vulnerable position right now. On the one hand, we're attached to this Republican Party that is officially in power. Officially, they control everything. Except they use their power, not only the fact that they've done nothing in their first year of controlling all three branches, but they actually validate, champion, and exalt every premise of the left on every major policy issue. So, you know, if they just turned out the lights and didn't do health care, didn't do taxes, we'd be better off. They address it. They spend several weeks and several months addressing it, and they address it from the premise of the left. Without getting too into the weeds on the details, here's what they're doing. Imagine you have a house full of furniture, and I tell you, we're going to go and remove every piece of furniture, put it on your lawn, throw out your back and scratch your walls in the process, and then we're going to put everything back in the house, slightly different order. Some rooms will look a little better, some worse, some about the same. That is what they're doing. Because Republicans refuse to cut spending, they're actually increasing spending. They got themselves into a revenue box. There's a hole in the deficit. But then they say they want to do tax reform. But then they don't define what tax reform is. And then they can't really give a tax cut because they don't have enough revenue. So what they do on the individual side of the code is they raise $3 trillion in taxes and they cut $3 trillion in taxes. So you have winners and losers. Some will gain a little bit, some will lose a little bit. But as you know, Sandy, the liability of raising someone's taxes by $500-$700 is much greater than the political benefit you're going to get from giving someone, you know, a small tax cut. And that's where we are today. This is political malpractice beyond belief.
You know, I just, who are they helping? You know, when we talk about health care, we look at the donors to many of the Republican leadership, to the good old boys club. But who's getting helped with this proposal?
I mean, obviously, there's a lot of business lobbying for the business tax cut side of it, which we all agree to, but Republicans have done a terrible job building the case. I mean, if you ever watched Ted Cruz's debate with Bernie Sanders, he spoke beautifully about how corporations aren't just brick and mortar and wealthy people. It's jobs, wages, and cheaper goods and services. But Republicans never build that case. So therefore, they feel the need to also do individual. But because they don't have the revenue, they don't have the values behind it. They've accepted the the progressive tax code. So they don't know what to do with themselves. And they're just running around in circles. Well, get rid of personal exemption, but expand this, cut this, but raise this. And they're making very, very systemic changes that are going to elicit blowback from a lot of constituencies and lobbyists. But then it's resulting in no systemic outcome. This plan is actually a brilliant nothing burger. If I had told you, Sandy, that we're going to design a plan that ticks off the most people but does absolutely nothing positive, I couldn't think of a better plan.
Wow, that's an interesting take on it, Daniel. All right, so we know that the Senate is working on their own plan. What do we know about that?
And in some ways it's a little better, in some ways it's a little worse, but it's the same fundamental problem. If you're going to give a tax cut, you have to give a tax cut. Here's the thing. Republicans were created by God to cut taxes. They don't do anything else good. They don't do anything good on social, on foreign policy, on national security, on immigration, on cutting spending, on health care. That we know already. But the one thing they've done good the last couple decades, dating back to Reagan, is cutting taxes. Now, Republicans have been accused of tax cuts for the rich, of blowing the hole in the deficit, but one thing they've never been accused of is raising taxes on people because they always cut taxes. To go ahead and raise taxes, which is what they're doing on net, because keep in mind, one of the details they're doing is they're getting rid of deductions permanently and categorically. But then when it comes to the rate cuts to make up for it, and hopefully more than make up for it to actually cut taxes, what they're doing is they're subjecting it to what's called the chain CPI, a slower rate of calculating inflation. So in the first couple of years, definitely the overwhelming majority will get a cut, albeit a small cut, and some will get an increase. But in 8 to 10 years from now, many people in the middle upper income, you know, picture working families in high cost of living areas, both have very successful jobs, earning $150,000, $200,000. And by the way, those are the people that are shouldering the full burden of Obamacare now, $2,100 premiums.
Wow.
The letters are coming in the mail. Those people will actually have a higher tax liability. I mean, this serves nothing. It serves no purpose other than to show we're doing something. Republicans feel that they need to do something because they haven't done anything. But what they need to do is not to just do something. They need to show the American people we're for upward mobility. We're for economic growth. We want to give you a tax cut. Instead, they're talking about tax reform. Well, what is that? Well, it's like health care reform. They never defined it.
You know, it sounds like this reminds me of what the Democrats did with Obamacare. It's like a bookkeeping trick. You know, it's you don't feel it on the front end, but, you know, 16 years later when Obama's out of office, then all this stuff sets in, or 8 years later, it all sets in. It's like a trick. The tricks that they play on the American people are just appalling. So the question is, Daniel, would there be a solution? I mean, I thought they were just going to make just percentages and do away with all the complications, give corporations a good tax break so they could bring some of their investment back home. I thought they were going to simplify things. This doesn't sound simple at all.
No, and everyone in the CPA community, accountants, are making fun out of this because it is the most the problem is they're arranging everything, all the details, not around what will give people the biggest tax cut or what will spawn the most economic growth and what makes the most business sense. It's all around arbitrary and random revenue benchmarks, or just these random talking points. So, for example, they have a talking point to collapse 7 brackets to 4. But I got news for you, Sandy. What is complicating the tax code is not the number of brackets. That's actually the least complicated thing, because now with free tax software, which is what most people use, they don't use a postcard, which the Republicans are stupidly talking about. They use free tax software. It tabulates that instantaneously. So, in fact, when you collapse brackets, it makes it more complicated because it's too arbitrary. Look, I don't believe in a progressive tax code. But once you accept the premise, which Republicans absolutely do, you actually need gradation. To have four is too arbitrary. So they revolve everything around that. They revolve it around revenue benchmarks. It is so random. It makes no sense. It serves no purpose. And one more point, Sandy, you said it's like Obamacare. I disagree a little bit. It's worse politically than Obamacare because at least Obamacare made sense for the Democrat base. It created more dependency. It offered more freebies for the people that are getting, you know, the subsidies, that are below the subsidy line. In this case, you're eliciting the blowback from Democrats, the class warfare stuff, oh, you know, you're doing tax cuts for the rich. But on the other hand, the middle-upper income families, which is really the breadbasket of the GOP base, they're going to see a tax increase, and they're going to get very upset.
You know, the Freedom Caucus, as I understand, Daniel, when this plan was first floated initially and some of the details were coming out, I believe they said they supported it. But now that these changes have been made in the last few days, do you know where the Freedom Caucus stands on this?
Well, I think a lot of people made a mistake because it sounded very nice, but no one sat down with the details. Also, I think they wanted to, they have somewhat of a complex about always saying no, and they felt that they needed to kind of work with them. But I think they realized that this is just unacceptable. And one of the things they're promoting is that everything runs through healthcare. Healthcare is everything. That's the biggest tax on Americans. That's the biggest expenditure for the government. And ironically, because it's the biggest expenditure, that's what blows the deficit, and that's what prevents us from having enough revenue to do a real tax cut. So you've got to go after Obamacare before and until we can do a good tax cut. So what they're pushing is to at least repeal the individual mandate, which will also save revenue, and then use that extra revenue to make sure that everyone does get a tax cut. But until now, Republicans have rejected that.
Yeah, I was going to say, you just heard on Doug McElway's report there that they don't want to do that because they're skittish because they've had the John McCains and other, you know, Lisa Murkowski and whoever else fight against them on changing Obamacare. So it's just it's a problem. Daniel, if you were king, is there a way to fix this?
The problem is you can't fix the Republican Party. I'm just saying you can't. You can absolutely fix this. There's a lot of ideas we have. They just don't want to do them because at some point our voters are going to have to realize the Republican Party doesn't believe in what their voters do the way the Democrat Party believes in their base voters.
What do you think of the advice that Donald Trump is getting from his financial advisors like Steve Mnuchin? Do you think that they're giving good advice or do you think that they're in consort with the Republican leadership on these changes?
Well, what advice do you think someone like me would give President Obama? Would I give him good political advice? I mean, Steven Mnuchin is a Democrat. I mean, this is the problem. This is the problem that Trump, on the surface, had a lot of good rhetorical ideas, and that's why he won. But because he doesn't understand details or care to learn about details, he appoints bad personnel. So what's happening is we're getting the lowest common denominator. We're getting kind of the worst elements of his persona, which aren't very popular, but we're not getting some of the good ideas that inherently he wants to do because he's just undermining it by appointing bad people. And then, you know, you got the GOP establishment that, you know, they've certainly never changed. So it's the worst mix of Trump's persona and the GOP's just pathetic agenda.
All right, Daniel Horowitz and his latest piece is Political Malpractice. GOP makes a lousy tax plan worse. We'll put it on our Facebook page. Daniel, thank you for following this. And I don't know what else to say. We just hope that the right thing will be done that helps the people and not harms them. That's really what we hope for. Daniel, thanks for joining me this morning. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.